It's about 35 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. This is Hannah Floor, and I am here in Studio One with two of our school officials. Erica Klutpainter, superintendent of the Petersburg School District, is here. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
As well as Sarah Holmgren, president of the school board.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for being here. And as we have been for months now, we're going to be talking about budget, financial stuff. That's where we're at. Tonight on the agenda, one of the main things on the agenda is a look at the draft budget for next school year. And, you know, that budget is based on flat funding from the state. It's also based on $3.4 million from the borough, which the borough has not promised you yet, to my knowledge. Nope. That is the maximum amount they can fund based on state regulation. How confident are you that you're going to get all of that $3.4 million?
Well, we're optimistic that we will. We had a productive work session, you know, a month or month and a half ago or so. I've certainly had questions and had meetings with several of the assembly members who had good questions and understand a lot of the challenges we're facing, because it's the same sorts of challenges that everyone's facing right now with regard to inflation and the cost of doing business. And we have to do certain things, right? Certain things that are required and they cost money. So yeah. I'm cautiously optimistic. I felt like they were very supportive last year. That was the largest increase we had ever asked for in my time here. And I felt like they were very supportive, and they're facing a lot of challenges revenue-wise. You know, as a community, there's things that have to be dealt with that we can support, but we can't make happen. So I think the $3.4 million was in the draft budget that was presented to the assembly last night. So we appreciate that moving forward. And I know they're having a work session, I think, next week. And their budget process is in May and early June as well. So we're all kind of lockstep moving forward and waiting for whatever impending state news will come in June, right. I guess.
So in the draft budget tonight, there are a lot of cuts. Mm-hmm. One of the things that stood out to me is that there are four teacher positions that are reduced. And, you know, I know that you have two teachers who have resigned. You've got one who resigned in December as well, and then two contracts for non-tenure that weren't renewed. Mm-hmm. So five teachers who are leaving. I'm curious if it means, if you're losing four teacher positions, does that mean you're cutting essentially four teachers' worth of classes as well? How does that work?
Well, it depends. It's not necessarily a one-to-one. There will be changes in programming, because that's the way it is. When you reduce people, there have to be changes. So changes in the elementary school typically mean if that's, you know, we're looking at reductions in each building as far as staff that way. So reductions in the elementary school, typically what that means is then you are increasing class size or potentially offering or providing multi-age classrooms. So instead of having two teachers per grade level, you might have, you know, two fourth grade and two fifth grade, you might have three total teachers that have a fourth, fifth, and a fifth. I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm just saying that's an option for how you do that. Or depending on student numbers that come into a class, you know, potentially there's a reasonable amount of students that you can create one class. You know, it depends on the numbers, and it also depends on the needs of the students. And then Heather and Brad will both need to be looking at priorities in their buildings for what they, how they want to see maybe those reductions, how they would apply them. We've fought pretty hard to sustain and pay for the two reading specialists, for example, in the elementary school. That's been really important and beneficial.
I was going to ask about your ability to comply with the Reads Act with this reduction.
It is a huge priority for the district and for Ms. Kahn in the elementary, and I would argue that the teachers would feel the same way. The support that they're getting, the interventions that are happening, the support for all of the assessments that have to happen, it's a lot of work, and they're making progress. So that's the good news. They had a session yesterday, actually, where they looked at their kindergarten progress monitoring Dibble's data, and I think everybody except for one little block was in the green and blue. So that's exciting. I mean, that's wonderful. That's what we want to hear, is that, that all that work of the classroom teachers and the support teachers and special ed teachers and intervention teachers, you know, so it's a matter of figuring out those priorities. Secondary-wise, one of the other reductions we had discussed early on, and again, these are all assumptions, right? So we had talked with the borough, and we've talked about it a bit here, making some reductions in the PE swim program, looking at that $180,000 bill that we pay for utilities and such. So we had proposed cutting that in half, asking the borough to take on $90,000 worth of that, and we would take on $90,000. And then we would potentially just reduce the program for right now, but increase the number of students in those classes. So we would potentially have one teacher rather than two. So, for example, Mr. Thane and Mr. Brock both teach elementary swim and elementary PE. And one class at a time, you know, they each have one, they each have one. Somebody teaches PE, somebody teaches swim. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, at this point, having one teacher do the swim and PE for elementary, increasing the class sizes with support in them, especially in the pool. Obviously, we'd have to have at least, we'd have two people, if not, and then probably a third lifeguard. So that's how we would do that.
So that would mean not necessarily fewer hours for the kids in the gym and in the pool, but just bigger, much bigger class sizes when they are there.
Yep.
A little bit more chaos, still same amount of time.
More challenging in that regard. Those are the ways, I mean, I think, and Sarah can certainly speak for the board's perspective and her perspective. I think what we've always tried to do here is figure out ways, because we've had to make reductions over the years many times for different reasons. We've never been in this situation.
No, I'd say this is the first time in 15 years on the board I've ever had to deal with. We've ever had to look at the budget and see what we have to do in order to make it. There's always been a little bit of wiggle room, and we're out of it.
Yeah. And I think that's the part, is also looking at how can we make the least impact, mm-hmm. And maybe stair step those reductions and the impacts to programs for our students in a way that doesn't completely annihilate something. So, for example, like with the swim program, that's a hugely important program in this community, and it's always been a highly valued program, and we have worked really hard to maintain it, you know, in lots of years of budgeting and different things. We've worked really hard at that. So that's the hard thing, right? We're used to having really, really small class sizes here. We're used to trying to figure out the ways to support those things. And so we're a few years behind, I think, what a lot of other districts are doing and have had to do. You know, we have reached that fiscal cliff that many other districts have reached several years ago. So,
yeah, you think about, like, other districts don't have the programs that we still have, and so we're just a few steps behind them and having to eliminate them, and hopefully we don't if the state gets their act together. But the reality is we can't budget expecting they will. Mm-hmm. We have to expect the worst, which has clearly been displayed over the last month.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
What have you heard from teachers in terms of having to teach more classes, having to teach larger class sizes, that sort of thing?
I mean, nobody loves that, right? Like, I mean, it's not the ideal. It's been, you know, and again, I think we're still looking at reasonable sizes in that mm-hmm. regard. I think we have to keep that in mind. I don't want to create a floodgate of panic. But I think the reality of what we're looking at next year, the following year, especially under this current administration in the state, I don't anticipate a change in the governor's opinion or action with regard to really supporting and trying to infuse a system that is starving. He's made it clear. So his actions have shown where he's at. He's continuing to try to hold the legislature hostage right now with regard to the holding on to this charter school issue, wanting that to be approved by the state board rather than going through the local process. And why? No one understands it. The process itself is working just fine. Charter schools are public schools. They work great in communities. Most people don't have an issue with this. Like, it seems to be a a sticking point that I people don't understand. So he keeps really holding on to that, and is willing to kind of go to the wall, I guess, on it, for lack of a better word. And he has a strong veto pen. He just does. And he has shown what he can and will do. And I think that's why we chose to budget very conservatively last spring. And we are very fortunate that we did that. That was, I will defend that decision wholeheartedly.
And just a note that this draft budget is, as we said, is based on flat funding from the state. Last year, there was a 340 one-time boost to the base student allocation. So it is possible that you will have a little bit more money than what you have in this draft budget. But again, you guys really like to not depend on anything.
Yeah, we don't want to be, absolutely, we don't want to be in the news like some of these other districts right
now. And I think the budget that Shannon and Erica worked out, it dips into our reserves quite a bit. And even if we get what we got last year, the 300 plus, you know, that'll bring our reserve back up. But it's still not the reality of, you know, being able to keep certain programs. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you can look and see what's going to be gone next year. We'll talk about it tonight, but in more depth. But, yeah, it's not solidifying the future at all.
Yeah. It's one.
And it's another Band-Aid.
One time.
Absolutely. And I think that's the key. If people have asked me a lot about this, what is it that we're fighting for? What do we advocate for? What are we looking for? It is putting that funding back into the BSA, into the actual formula. That's what needs to happen. These one-time shots are ridiculous to try to plan. No business would ever operate like we do. You know,
they don't even do it in their other departments.
No.
It's only education.
And when you say putting it into the formula, the idea behind that is that it is something you can count on every mm-hmm. single
yep.
year. So then
it
you
doesn't
can hire
change.
Staff because yep. you know that you'll have the money for it in the coming years, year yep. after year, not just one year.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. So once it's in. And every year, like right now, we're going to base it on 5960, which is the base student allocation right now without any outside funding. And that's what we did last spring as well. Mm-hmm. So then when there were districts who budgeted on the 680. 680 was what was in the formula last year, too.
Yeah.
They budgeted on 680. Some did cut it back and were in okay shape. And we were in good shape because of that, but also because we did end up during our count period, I want to remind people of this, with almost 20, we budgeted for 430. We ended up with almost 469.
430 students. And
yep.
and every extra student gets you more money. And so having that higher mm-hmm. enrollment got you more mm-hmm. money than you
yep.
expected.
And that was unexpected as well. That was mm-hmm. a great thing, because what that's doing for us right now is allowing us to have this fund balance that is a reasonable fund balance, that is giving the board a little bit of a way to take a little bit of a breath. You know, we're not, if you go into this fund balance by $300,000, you're not wiping it out.
Right.
And there are districts that are wiping out their fund balances. They
yeah,
have
they're borrowing
nothing.
From their borough.
Yeah.
Because they have no money.
Nothing. They
yeah.
have nothing.
Well, going from one complicated financial topic to another, I want to change gears and talk about the teachers' union negotiations. Another thing that's on the agenda for tonight. Erica, you're going to be updating folks on that. And you said something before we turned the mics on about how the teachers were going to be commenting on that at the meeting as well.
I think so.
That's what we've been told, that they'll be speaking, I think.
Okay.
I don't know what
and,
you know,
and
they'll
so,
be covering, but...
Yeah. Okay. And so this negotiation process has been going on for more than 2 months now. The last time we spoke a month ago, you were entering into mediated negotiations that mm-hmm. didn't yield an agreement. What are you going to be updating folks on tonight in terms of those teacher negotiations? And then I have an email from someone here who wasn't able to call in but has a question for,
okay.
you, for both
okay.
of you.
Okay. And Sarah obviously can weigh in as well. She, as the board president, is on the negotiating team as well. So essentially where we are is we are still remaining hopeful that we are going to be able to move forward with, and I will say, a necessary increase to teacher salaries. And I believe that that is still a critical component that needs to be stated. We are not moving forward with a flat request. We're not moving forward with minimal requests. We came into this year, and we've said it publicly for several years, that our teachers, the last couple of negotiation cycles, have worked through the process with us and we have all been able to come to agreements that we knew were lower than some other districts. And we had a lot of conversations about work environment, class sizes, having support staff, counselors, you know, having aides, lots of things like that, having some of those abilities to maybe not have 40 kids in a class or whatever, you know.
Meaning the fact they were being paid less than other places, but they had these other benefits that were not monetary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then just knowing that we come in on the lower side of a lot of salary schedules across the state, but we are not the lowest, and that has something that has been out there a bit. I would say that our beginning salary schedule, starting salary wages in this district are very much in need of an increase, and that has been one of our primary goals as the district negotiating team, is to make a significant increase and move the schedule forward for all, but also to really try to look at that lower end, because recruitment is a huge concern, recruitment of new staff. We also want to acknowledge the work of the people that have been working in our district for a long time. So it's a balancing act, as always. It's challenging to explain all of this too, because typically what it is, you know, people will report on negotiations and say, okay, it's a 3-year contract and you have a salary schedule and you got a 1%, a 1%, and a 1%, for example, or whatever. We are both, the teachers and the district, have both proposed new schedules, because it's time to do that. Because eventually, once you just keep applying percentages to the same schedule, obviously the same percentage to a lower salary doesn't move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
A percentage on the top end of the salary schedule, you know, moves the needle further, and then you have this discrepancy that becomes really, really wide.
So as time goes on, it becomes
a much bigger
discrepancy than it was initially. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Exactly. And that's just math, right?
Yeah.
So retooling a salary schedule is very common. I mean, eventually after a few rotations, that's just what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think both of our negotiating teams agree that that needs to happen, and that it is time to do that, even though this is a very challenging fiscal situation that we're in. And I would again remind people that the reason we're able to have this conversation is because we have been very conservative over the years in our budgeting as well. So that's why we're in a position where we can really even have these conversations. And it is necessary. It is necessary to look at a very reasonable increase. And we have made a generous offer in a time that that's fiscally challenging.
What's the sticking point? What's the teachers' union asking for that the district is unable to give?
At this point, and Sarah certainly weigh in, we've gone back and forth a lot on a few different language pieces. You know, there's things about personal leave. There's some things about sick leave, you know, things that come up a lot during contracts. We've passed things back and forth quite a bit. We've all agreed that we would like to see several things be updated and offered to our teachers. Every one of those things always has some sort of financial impact. So we have costed out what we might estimate some of those things to be. If you get one more personal leave day, you factor in the sub costs, and, you know, there's all those things that you have to factor in. So putting that out there, we've agreed to a lot of those. We have not signed off on any of those because the salary has become the sticking point. So we have offered generous increases, and I think the teachers can see that they are generous. I think they feel that after the last few years and all of the crazy inflation, you know, again, that we're all dealing with, we understand that, we hear that, for sure. But again, we're operating within constraints as well. And even any increase, even a status quo increase with people just sort of getting their step, you know, like a regular step increase, is going to require a level of reductions, not just next year, but for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's what I think is unique, like not working in the public sector really ever, except for briefly. that maybe it's unique to teaching, and it's not necessarily unique maybe at the borough either, is that there's increases to the salary, but then there's also each year you move down the salary schedule. So you're moving up, I guess. You make more each year. Some people, what they call cap out, because there's different columns that people can move over, or they get down to the bottom. And if they haven't gotten any further than their master's degree and so many credits, then they can't move over. So then they might stop. But everybody, for the most part, I'd say probably 90% of our staff are moving from one level to the next on the salary schedule. And then on top of that, you have your percentage increases. So that's, to me, what was unique about being involved in public, contracts, was that, you move a step, but you also get a percentage increase mm-hmm. on top of that. Mm-hmm. So some of them, the last one we offered, which we'll talk about tonight, would have put our lowest step. Here we are right here.
Mm-hmm. There's our top.
Yeah. Our top. And we have 25% of our staff in the upper half because they stay. We don't have a lot of turnover. You're at $95,583.
By the end of 3 years.
By the end of 3 years, starting at $92,603.
That's for a senior mm-hmm. staff member.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And our lowest or beginning would be starting at 854, to give you an idea. Beginning of a career, end of a career. Yeah. Or not quite end of a career, but some of those are getting closer to retirement.
And a couple other thoughts on that is just to note that in order to retool, we, as I said earlier, we talked about bumping the bottom up. And so currently right now we are at a 47,000 starting salary. And that is not an acceptable living wage. It just isn't. Not in a professional, and really not in most positions. So we agreed very clearly with the teachers that there's work to be done on this schedule. The bottom salary schedule in particular is one of the lowest. It's not the lowest, but it's one of the lowest. So we started this with making a significant bump. So we went from 47,300 to $50,854 right off the bat. Like, that's where we're
wanting to reset.
That's where we're wanting to reset. Mm. And the same sort of percentage increase on the top. Mm-hmm. So the top end, same thing. This first year, we wanted to infuse a larger increase, because we have held increases the last couple of negotiations to things like 1%, and
you haven't increased there.
It's not been. They haven't been super super high. They've moved, but they haven't moved a ton. So I think we're all in agreement on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that you have answered all of the questions that I had here in this email. So I'm going to put that aside. But I do have one more question, and then we're going to switch gears. I know that a couple of teachers are resigning at the end of the year, and I don't know if you have the reasons for those resignations, but I was wondering whether these negotiations that you're having with the teachers union, whether it concerns you that more teachers might resign because of these difficult teacher negotiations.
Well, I can't speak directly to people's decisions. I mean, I can talk a bit about the people that are leaving. We're very sad to see Mr. Petruski go, and Mr. Briner both. Mr. Petruski and his family are moving for family reasons. They're moving back to be with family with their young children. So they're moving to the East Coast, Michigan, I think. So we're very sad to see them leave. They kind of came here and started their family and had their children, and they've been, their whole little initial starting of life was here. So we're sad to see them go. And of course, Ethan is a PHS grad. He's one of ours, and it's so we're sad to see him go as well. I think he's making some decisions about what he wants to just do next in his life. He's been a great, great staff member. So yes, do I worry about people moving away from our district? Absolutely. And there are lots of reasons why people do. And certainly, I'm sure there are financial considerations that people are making. They're looking at salaries. I would also, the flip side of that, I would also say that we've had a couple of teachers that have moved here just this year. Couple of our new teachers in the elementary school actually that came from two districts that have substantially higher teacher salaries than Petersburg does, although we're getting closer if we can get our offer across the finish line. they moved here. So there are reasons why people want to move here, and there's reasons why people want to live here and maybe raise their family here and teach here. And some of those reasons are things like class sizes, support, mm-hmm. you know, having aides, having all those pieces that we do really value, having programs that people think are really important. So
working right. conditions.
Yeah.
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 Okay. We're going to switch gears because we are technically out of time,
but our
street beat host has not yet arrived. So we're just going to sneak a couple minutes in because I wanted to talk about the award that Heather Kahn recently received.
Yes.
This is the from the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals. She was named the National Distinguished Principal for 2024. And Erica, you were the one who nominated her.
I was.
I want to hear a little bit about why you nominated her.
Well, I mean, the proof is very evident for anyone who has ever worked with or known or been around Ms. Kahn in school or just in the community. You know her absolute dedication and commitment to kids, to family, to education. She is tireless and passionate and an incredible work. I mean, her work ethic is just ridiculous. So I think she mentioned in her interview with you that she said that's something she works on is work-life balance. And that's one of my jobs with her is to help her work on it. I don't have great work-life balance.
No,
but
Erica doesn't either.
I don't have great.
She might soon.
Yes, I'm trying.
July.
Maybe I'm getting there, but I don't have great. I'm not a great role model, but I tease her about like you. Yeah.
She told me she gets up at 4 in the morning and
yeah, and
gets
sometimes
started
we're
with her day.
Texting at 4:30 or 5
Goodness.
In the morning. But we also, so I mean, it's pot calling kettle black. But she
works
is
hard.
So deserving mm-hmm. of this award, and I was so thrilled that she was in the right because I knew that there was a certain time limit you have to be a principal, and she was right in that 5 year. And I mean, my gosh, she came in 2019. She started, and then 2020 was
Hit.
COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the world fell apart, and she just marched right through and kept a positive attitude and kept education moving forward. I mean, I think that's the other piece of this. It's not just about that. I mean, she is tireless, and her work in regard to literacy education and the READS Act is she is highly, highly thought of and sought after for her opinions and her tools and the way that she's implemented things. So she's very deserving. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're lucky to have her.
We're excited. Yeah. And we are nominating her. I mean, she's putting her name in the hat. So she's the National Distinguished Principal for Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 50. They all get to go to D.C. in October. And then there's an application process to become like the National Distinguished Principal. And
for the whole United States.
There's no reason why that girl should not win that award. So,
I look forward to the announcement this fall. Thank you both so much for coming in. And again, the school board meeting will be live on KFSK at 6 p.m. tonight. It is also open to the public if you want to go in person. It is at the middle and high school library.
Perfect. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.